What's up, everybody? I'm Adam Sager. He is Sean Salisbury. Welcome into Unpaved. Sean, we may just have one baseball game left this season.
Yeah, I mean, just the picture of Clayton Kershaw walking back out to the mound knowing that he's not going to pitch in Dodger Stadium ever again unless it's throwing out the first pitch, which I'm sure he'll do next year or the year after. Yeah. But headed to Toronto, they have been resilient, man, and they have been better in more clutch moments. They just have, notwithstanding the 18-inning game, obviously, when that happened with Freddie Freeman. But, and then there, Savage is the perfect name for the guy who went to the hill last night, man. He was savage and deadly. The middle 2, 3, and 4 struck out twice. He got everybody at least once. And he didn't get called up, Segs, until September? Or get his first start, basically, in September. And then game one wasn't, like, as sharp as he wanted. But he had the, you know, splitter and a cut or whatever, splitter slider last night working. And he was phenomenal. And 12 strikeouts. No rookie's ever done that in a World Series game. So I don't see, Segs, look how quickly it shifts. You had him in 5, possibly 6, Dodgers. I had the Dodgers in 6. And we had a man, after that game, win one more, head back, or win one more, regardless, you're in great position. Mm-hmm. And now we look at it, and the Dodgers are going to have to fight and scratch because the bats in that lineup have been clutch. They're a scrappy team. It reminds me of those teams that we just keep overlooking in the past. We did that with an Astros team that was a little younger, right, Segs? We've done it. We did it with a Kansas City Royals team. Just kind of now this team has stars, make no mistake. Vlad and Bichette and the group, they've got some stars. But there's a grind about them that the Dodgers are going to have to play damn near flawless baseball to go there and win 2 in a row. It's going to be hard to do.
Yeah, and you mentioned Trey Savage. I mean, he was just incredible. 7 innings, only gave up 3 hits, 1 home run, which was the only run he gave up. Did not walk a single person, and as you said, struck out 12. This is a guy who's just 21 years old. He made, I wrote it down here, he started in high A because he was drafted last year, 20th overall.
Yeah, let's not forget he was drafted last year. Right.
He did not pitch in the minor leagues last year because now with the draft being a little bit later, a lot of those pitchers don't even pitch their draft year. They just sit out. They kind of just rest their arm from college or high school, whatever it is, and then they start the training in the winter, and then they come into spring training and they move on. This guy had 7 low A starts. That's where he started, in low A. 7 starts there, 4 starts in high A, 7 starts in double A, 4 starts in triple A, 3 starts during the major league season. And now he's
not till September was his first one, right?
And now he's had 5 starts in the postseason, including game 1 and a huge game 5 last night. So, I mean, give all the credit in the world to this kid. Give all the credit in the world to the Blue Jays for understanding that we see a kid that's pitching well. We see a kid that we think we can move a little quick. And, you know, we've seen guys come up and pitch. Garrett Crochet not too long ago for the White Sox came up, pitched out of the bullpen in the playoffs, is a guy who'd barely pitched in the minors. Brandon Finnegan, I think, did it for that Royals team. I don't even know that he ever pitched in the minors. He might have just came right into the majors and pitched. So we've seen guys do this, but not really start and not start multiple World Series games.
And dominate after the first game that he really wasn't that sharp, right?
Right.
And to go out and have this kind of command and dominate a lineup. And there's a great picture that he needs framed as a poster on his wall or something. Of you see Ohtani swinging out of his helmet and he's throwing the pitch and his body is facing first base like he's walking off. And it was like, man, you have to have that. The greatest, you're a rookie, 12 strikeouts. You handle the middle of the lineup like a champ. Yep. And you get the guy with the greatest player in the world swinging through it. And he got so many swing and miss last night. The guy was phenomenal. And the fact that Toronto, in a really, really important game, trusts him to go out there and do it with minimal major, that's the one right there. Get that thing framed, man. Because just as quickly with the was it Savage who gave up? Was it the home run he gave up to Kike Hernandez?
Yes.
The second he threw it right down the cock of the ball, he let it go and he starts to turn like, oh, my gosh. Yeah. He's not even looking. He don't want to know how far it goes. But then he settled back in. Like Snell settled in. But what I was going to say is I love the way they ambushed the beginning of the game and that Schneider ambushed fastball looking because Springer says, dude, you could change basically, to paraphrase, change a game, go up there hunting it, man. Yep. And he did, and it worked. And then, you know, Snell missed to Guerrero, and he hammered that pitch as well. And before you know it, it's 2-0. Now, while Snell settled in, you still are in a chase mode.
Yes.
You still. And then you saw the devastating inning, which kind of told who Toronto's been and kind of the struggles of some of the Dodgers. Ball gets through. Wild pitch, wild pitch, wild pitch. Run scores, no hits. And bam, another run. And now you're what, up 3-1, I think. That got it to at the time, Segs. I think it got it to 3-1 or maybe 4-1. And so you go three wild pitches. And I don't think that's ever happened before either in a World Series game where you go wild, wild pitch, wild pitch. And run comes around to score. The Dodgers, some problems with the way that they beat themselves at times. But I don't want anybody out there to think, well, the Dodgers, they're worth all this money. They beat themselves. Toronto's had a real good reason why they have kicked their ass. If you notice, Toronto wins, there's been a separation in score, Segs, in 6-1-5. The Dodgers had to grind that one out. So right now, they're sitting in a great position, and I'm quite sure they don't want to get to seven games. If you're the Toronto Blue Jays, you do not even want to risk having a second game at home. You want to get it handled. Impressive performance by a team that all year long in the American League, for the most part, was the most consistent team in the American League. And here they are doing the same thing in the postseason and getting it from a rookie who doesn't even know how to pitch yet, and he's 22 years old. He looked like a superstar last night. What a hero performance it was.
Yeah, and you mentioned it, the fact that you lose George Springer, and then his replacement comes in, and Davis Schneider, and hits the leadoff home run that George Springer has done so many times in his career, that and then the back-to-back home runs with Vlad. I think that also just had to settle you Savage down a little bit too. Like, okay, now I've got
a spotted you too to open up the bottom of the first inning. Gave you two runs right off the bat. It's a good thing to go. We all need that.
Exactly. So I think that really helped the youngster as well. When you look at kind of just the way you kind of mentioned how the Dodgers have lost, but do you feel like they're defeated having to travel now all the way to Toronto to say, like, man, we lose one game and we're done now? Do you feel like they're kind of defeated heading out there?
If the reigning World Series champion that's got Freeman, Muncy, Betts, Ohtani, Kershaw, go up and down this roster, Dave Roberts, and they've seen this movie so many times where they're the favorite, they're in, you know, tough games. Well, we're going to find out, to answer your question, is this a team of cosmetic millionaires and billionaires, or is this team got some soul when they're challenged? I think we can say that because they were challenged during this season.
Yep.
With a lot of injury sigs and their bullpen and the revenue until they decided to make a few moves late and get it done. They've been challenged and they were able to handle, you know, the threat throughout the season of the Padres chase. And early on, the Giants gave some love. And then the Diamondbacks hung around for a minute. You start to see, and then they went through all these injuries and they were able with lineup changes and starting pitching hurt and the rest of it were able to. But if this team goes I'm sure they're a little bit deflated. You got about 5 hours on a plane to get undeflated, man. You have to. This is the World Series. We've seen throughout these playoffs road teams go into a building and win. Ask Toronto. They had to do it in Los Angeles. Ask Toronto. They had to do it in Seattle after Seattle went into their building and what? Beat them twice, Segs? That was the series before?
Yeah.
Let's see. It was the series before. Remember, both road teams go into your building. You're down 0-2, and we're like, oh, how are they going to overcome this? Yeah. And they did. So this is – hell, put it this way. If we're asking this question and people in Los Angeles or somebody in that clubhouse is feeling like you just asked, you might as well not show up because you're not winning. Right. I would imagine a team that's a reigning World Series champ relishes the opportunity to go in like pros will tell you, I want to go in and kick their ass in front of their fans in their home, in their kitchen. So if the Dodgers go out and play like they're defeated, shame on them as World Series champions. And after that, you know, big 18 inning win to allow a team to come in and do that to you. And if they killed your will, then I don't even know what to say if that's the case. I would imagine the Dodgers will put up a fight knowing the people on the roster, but you're damn right. I would think that it was probably, I would look at him and say, man, where's the soul? I don't need the makeup cosmetic part of it. I think the Dodgers got more soul than that, Segs, but we're going to find out. And I think you'll know pretty early in game six, what's that, tomorrow night, how they're feeling about it. But this should be a fight back challenge as opposed to a we got a wilt challenge, because think how quickly the momentum shifts if you go kick Toronto's ass in their building. Now they're back to, oh my gosh, what are we going to do here? So I would expect a fight from the Dodgers, and now I'm feeling like seven games is going to be it. Now we'll decide who's going to win after the sixth game, but I would imagine there's some pride in the Dodgers clubhouse. If not, they've got to quit doing stuff that beats that gives Toronto another swing of the bat or gives them an advantage, because they're running the bases well and they are taking advantage of every Dodger blunder for the most part.
Yeah, game six tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Central Time. Yamamoto, who's pitched brilliantly this postseason against Kevin Gausman, who's also been really good and kind of the leader of that Blue Jays staff. So if you got your guys going that you would probably want going right now with the way they're pitching. I know Yesavage was great last night, but if you're the Blue Jays, you want your veteran and Kevin Gausman out there on the mound. And if you're the Dodgers, Yamamoto, you gave him all this money. He's pitched great in the postseason. Time for him to show up again for your team. And offensively, Dodgers, you got to show up. You can't have one of these, you know, like you said, when the Blue Jays have won, the offense has been silent for the Dodgers. When the Dodgers win, Ohtani's making some noise. Betts is making some noise. So it's really something that, you know, the Dodgers offense has got to step up and show early in the game to the Dodgers pitching. Like, we're here, we're scoring you multiple runs, so you guys can sit in there and just pitch your game. So yeah, and then if we have a game seven, it's Saturday night.
Yeah, if the Dodgers are able to take care of their business, you know, then it'll be an all hands on deck thing, no doubt. And the Dodgers, Ohtani's still going to be good for an inning for you. I mean, Yesavage is 22. I don't know if in game seven he needs to get you an out. Maybe he can't. I don't know if you're going to get to that, but they're hoping they don't. You know, I would think Blake Snell's done completely, considering 116, 117 pitches. I don't see him. But you know what, Segs? Maybe he gives you, if they get to game seven, that he can give you an out or two against a left-hander or what have you. So it's going to be interesting. The Dodgers cannot be in a chase mode in this game six. They have got to start just like Toronto did them, or it can become deflating if they're shutting you down and it's 3-1 in the sixth inning. Then it becomes a little bit of a problem. Anxious to see how the Dodgers respond to what is their biggest adversity of the year right now.
Yeah, moving on to some college football. Sean, we had some breaking news right before the show. Matt Rhule in Nebraska, 2-year extension that puts on I think it was $15 million buyout for this season, which takes Matt Rhule, which some had as kind of the leader. It's kind of the guy that, you know, it would go a little bit and then boom, here's Matt Rhule to Penn State. But now with this extension, with the buyout and everything, it does take Matt Rhule off the board for Penn State. And now we'll kind of see where they head next in their coaching search. But do you feel like this is the right move for Matt Rhule to stay at Nebraska when maybe Penn State was calling, or did he maybe get early word, hey, we're probably going to go in a different direction, use this and go get yourself some more money?
I think this happens a lot. You probably got early word, but also when they do this, it shows you that Nebraska feels committed to him to extend it, what, through 2032 or 2033, whatever it is.
Yes. Yeah.
Or make it so they're going to see it through with him to see where it goes. I think if you're Matt Rhule, you call it a blessing. I like Matt Rhule. Always did when he was at Baylor. I think he's a good football coach, Segs. I do. It didn't work out too well in Carolina. They didn't have many players. But here's a perfect case in point. The guy must interview well, and I think he's a good coach. But what have they done at Nebraska since he's been there as far as championship?
Nothing.
I'm not trying to shrink Matt Rhule, it's one thing, because as a fan of his, like I said, when I watched him go through the college, he's got some NFL feel to him, even though he was a coach at Carolina, even before that with the college, and he's done some good things. Don't misunderstand me. But think about this. A guy got an extension. and he's secure in his job for about seven more years or whatever it is, six more years, and a huge buyout. What was the rush? Does Nebraska think the program's turned around? And I just said, I think Dr. J said the same thing. What were they rushing to? I know you're securing it. So they must have good feelings about him in the building. I have good feelings about him. I don't have great. I don't believe when we're hit 2030 that we're having the conversation that Nebraska's won a national championship with Matt Rhule. I don't believe that's going to happen. So, but do I think he's a good coach? I do. But it goes to show you again to my point the other day, how many great coaches match great jobs? How many great coaches? The truth of the matter is, it's probably a blessing for Matt Rhule that he's staying at Nebraska. Not that he, you know, go to Penn State. Obviously, Penn State's got a better chance to win a national championship quicker. They get better players. They just do. Unlike Nebraska of old with Mike Rozier and Turner Gill and Irving Fryer, you those guys, Dave Remington, Dean Steinkuhler, those guys, they're not coming out of high school and say it's a must-go to. Matt's got to do some extra recruiting. He's good at it. But and I do like him. But it just goes to show you, we reward a lot of guys. I mean, it's a $15 million buyout with Matt Rhule. Who's paying that? Who's paying that? I mean, you pay that $15 million buyout for, I mean, who's paying it? So it's great for Matt Rhule because it shows somebody loves you. Now, even if you wanted the Penn State gig, it's kind of cool that for seven next years, you're locked up and got it going. I don't know. I could see a blur about why Nebraska did it, but it's not the clearest picture in the world to me, because if they don't make a playoff run or get close to winning a conference or so in the next 2 years, right, which that's not going to happen, I don't think. Segs, well, what do you do if you're Nebraska? Okay, we're done. Then you got 5 years left to pay him? I mean, it's crazy. So as much as I like Matt Rhule, it goes to my point. How many great coaches? There's more great jobs than there is great coaches. I'm talking about powerful jobs than there are powerful difference-making coaches at that level right now. I'm just telling you there is, and it's obvious. And imagine this. Penn State's going to have to go out and probably settle for the third or fourth guy they want to get the gig, because they're not getting Lane Kiffin, I wouldn't think. I mean, maybe if you wanted a John Gruden and John wasn't getting a job somewhere, maybe he'd go, but they're not getting their first choice. They'll tell you they did, but they're not. And Nebraska, it's good to be a coach that if the school that you're there wants you and extends you, when in truth, are we even sure that Nebraska, that Matt Rhule was going to get that gig in the first place?
Yeah.
Not a bad thing.
It felt like early on he was the guy.
But no doubt. He fits it.
Yes. So we'll see what happens there. I don't know if you saw this down in Louisiana, but Louisiana governor chimed in on this LSU job, and he says, quote here, where'd it go? There it is. We are not going down a failed path, speaking about the LSU job. And I wanted to tell you something. This is a pattern. The guy that wrote Kelly's contract cost Texas A&M $70 million something. Talking about when they had to fire Jimbo Fisher, we have a $53 million liability. I believe that we are going to find a great coach, but the board of supervisors are going to come up with a committee and they're going to find us a head coach for LSU. I mean, strong words from the governor. He's obviously not happy with where LSU stands right now. It's his state. It's his, you know, people take pride in LSU down there. That's their state school, basically. You know, yeah, you got some others, but that's the main school down there in Louisiana that's fighting for national championships year in, year out. Were you surprised when you saw the Louisiana governor get involved in this LSU search?
Two things I don't want in this hire. Well, actually three. I don't want the governor or any government picking my head coach, number one. Stick to the politics. Right. He may love sports, but that's stay in your lane. Two is why the hell he thinks he gets to pick the thing, but it's a state school, so he's going to put it this way. They pull a lot of weight when you're the governor or you're running a state, right? Two, I don't want Woodward choosing it either. The guy has cost two universities $130 million without any repercussions for his job. Once again, goes back. I'm sure he's a great guy and the rest of it, but normally if you're tied to one big hire, especially nowadays, used to be, oh, we paid a head coach $2 million for 3 years, $6 million, we can live through it now, but 15, 20 years ago. Now these guys are making $10 million and they get by. He's owed, what's he owe? $130, $140 million of contract money for both schools that he hired. And normally if it's one big hire and you don't, I've seen it happen at USC. AD after AD changing. It didn't work with that guy. The AD eventually finds his way out. That is who mm-hmm. you are. That's your you're married to that. Well, he's been able, oh, I'm married there. Let me get out of here. I'm married. I wouldn't let him do the hiring either, quite frankly, because you know what? He'd be a small voice on the committee. And I hate saying that. You're the AD, you should, but he's proven that he can't hire the right guy. So it's time. And the third one that I hate, committees. 15 people hiring a head coach that, quite frankly, probably never coached a game in their life right. or been an AD in their life. It'll be somebody on the board of advisors or the board of regents, or maybe they put a committee together. Hopefully it's not, what is it, the corn, you know, whatever that is that hires, you know, the consulting firm. Is it Corn Ferry? It's not Corn Ferry, is it? It's no, Corn something, right?
That's a golf thing, right?
Like, that's a golf thing, but they don't, that's not the same, right?
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
You know who I'm talking about, right? Yeah. The hiring committee, right?
Yeah.
I don't need that. Football people hiring football people and leaders is the thing. You know what? Then go hire Zig Ziglar, who's a motivational speaker. Hire a guy and say, I'm going to interview him for an hour. When you go through the process, have him sit on the interview and say, that guy's got no leadership skills. I don't really care who it is. Tony Robbins. I'm joking, obviously. But committees usually don't get it right, in my opinion. Because who the hell's on the committee? Who's the person that's telling the committee, these are the guys on the committee we want? Okay. Right. Go to a couple former LSU players. I don't know. Hell, call Nick Saban up. If he doesn't want the job, say, Nick, who would you hire?
That's exactly.
I'm dead ass serious. If you want a committee, call up Nick Saban. Call up three or four coaches that aren't in. Call Jimmy Johnson down in Miami. And who would you hire? Nick Saban, whatever. And say, who would you hire for the gig? Let him be in on the interview. I don't know if he'd want to. Pay him $3 million to sit in on the interview process and say, Nick, would you mind be a consultant through this? We've seen Tony Dungy do it in the past. Mm-hmm. Guys will bring in, put him in, and then let Nick take the leadership, the qualities it takes to be a great coach that he proved, and let him do it. But a committee, and I think Woodward has played his way out of being able to be exclusively the hiring process and reporting to the president or the board of regents or the provost of the school or whatever we call that leader at different schools, state and private schools. And I don't want politicians to make the decision either.
Right.
Because they can't even run their own nose. Why the hell do I think they want to run a fucking football program? So I'm not saying him, I'm talking about politicians in general.
Right.
You tell us to stay in our lane. Well, I'd just as soon you stay in yours as well. In any city, in any state, take a look around you. Let politicians are in certain get a hold of certain states. And they'll have you in New York City voting for that cat. Okay. So you don't want to do that. So I don't know what they're going to do, but you know what? I'd pay Nick Saban a couple $1 million and say, would you be in on the interview process? And we'll take the highest recommendation. Let him choose if Nick would do it. If there's two or three, you're going to pay some firm a couple $1 million to find a committee. Why the hell wouldn't you hire the best coach in history to be a part? Hell, if you want, have him and Urban Meyer interview college coaches by them, you know, in separate room where they're not in there together conferring over it. Let them write down all the things, go through the process, and then compare their notes. And if they come up close with the same kind of notes, you probably could do a lot worse than hiring a guy that somebody else who's won national titles knows how to get accomplished.
Yeah, for sure.
It's too big a job, Segs. It's the biggest job in the state. It is by far outside of government. It's the biggest. It's bigger than the Saints' job. It's the biggest job in the state by a long shot. At one of when it comes to just pure night football passion, all of it, there's probably not five gigs better. Who doesn't want to coach in LSU in Death Valley? Now, it may not be like living in North Carolina in a great place. It may not be living in Eugene, Oregon, where it's beautiful and green. But Baton Rouge has its peeps and they got their tradition and their culture. And it's any of us who've been there like I have, they love their football and it's everything to them. So don't screw up this hire, because if the AD screwed up this hire and he had a say in it, he can't be the AD anymore because he's directly tied to that head coach. And he's got away with it at two programs now and about $130 million extra bucks that he's going to have to give away. Not him, but their universities.
Before we jump to the NFL, let's pay off our poll question from yesterday, which involves LSU. Who will be the next head coach at LSU based on the Kalshi top four right now? And we had actually a really close race in this poll question. Lane Kiffin, John Sumrall, Nick Saban, Eli Drinkwitz, which we were talking about Nick Saban, you know, possibly just being part of the search for the next coach. But Kalshi had him in the top four for odds. But Lane Kiffin did win out at 30.7%. Summerall right there, who's the Tulane head coach right there in Louisiana, he's at 28.6. Drinkwitz from Missouri is at 25, and then Saban at 15% of the vote. So
the reason why people didn't vote Saban, they know he's probably not going.
Okay? Not coming back, right. Yeah, no,
he would also feel like it was a betrayal to Alabama, I think, in Nick's heart. I do. Right. You know, him and Miss Terry, and I'm sure he loved his time when he won at LSU, but, you know, when I think of Nick Saban, it's Alabama. Because I did Michigan State. It's not as much I loved him at LSU. He was a phenomenal Alabama guy. And I may maybe be a consultant to help because he knows it, but I don't know if that's the case. The truth of the matter is, if you said, who do you want or who's going to be the head coach, if you put the same thing up for Florida, Lane Kiffin would win that one as well.
Yeah.
Put the same one up for LSU, Lane Kiffin. He's the hot commodity right now.
If we change this to who would you want to hire if you were LSU based on the Kelce top four, Nick Saban probably would have won running away. Because
going away, right.
Yes. So it's based on the wording there. And then our
grass guy, real quick, grass guy, battery sucks. Listen, I understand if you're comparing it to living at UCLA and Brentwood over that or living on the coast, you're the USC head coach and you got a house right there in Manhattan Beach. Yes, but Baton Rouge may suck to the outside world, but those, if you're a football coach, I mean, you got, they got enough money to go to the gated big area where all the money is, right? But the truth of the matter is it's like, it is such a passionate town that you immerse yourself into that culture right there. When I say Baton Rouge sucks, it's probably not, if you're not coaching there and you've never been there, you're not saying that's my retirement spot, but I have such great respect for it because I love the fan base and I love the football. But yeah, compared to other places, but you could say that about a lot of college towns. I mean, you say, hey man, you want to go to Norman? I love Norman, but some people don't like college towns. So there you go.
I'm nobody's picking LSU because of Baton Rouge. They're picking it because of the prestige of the program, the fans, the conference they play in.
Tough-ass place to play in. Good recruits. Yeah.
The fact that they're playing for national championships damn near every year. You know, they're in the hunt for it. So that's why they're choosing. Not Baton Rouge. Yeah. Matt Rhule just took a bunch of money to live in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Right. So, I got news for you. 10 or 11 million bucks. $12 million in Lincoln, $12 million in Baton Rouge gets you a pretty damn big spread. You can deal with the rest of it, okay? Just learn the culture and what they like there. But I'm just anxious to see what Lane Kiffin's going to do. Three schools are in love with him, I think. The one he's at and the two he's not. And I'm just wondering where he goes is where he thinks, forget the money right now, where he thinks he's going to win the national championship. That's what he's going to do.
We're still 2 months away from knowing, too.
Because I know.
Lane ain't going to tip his hand early. He's going to be right there with his team fighting for a national championship. And if they make the college football playoff, that just extends it. So now if they were to lose again and maybe miss the college football playoff and just get into a bowl game, then we could see it kind of.
What if he went and won it? What if he went and won it this year?
Well, you can't.
Would he leave or stay? Right?
You can't.
I wouldn't think so, but can you? I don't know. And this year, hell, I don't know who's winning the damn thing.
Do you know how hated he would be in Oxford, yet cheered at the same time?
Like, oh, we love you for getting us our first national title.
And now you bail? You
know, like, we hate you because you're leaving. We're not going back to back. You. Yeah, that's tough, man. Yeah.
That would be brutal. Like, I mean, can you imagine as a fan? We just won a national championship. We weren't supposed to win a national championship. We're Ole Miss. We don't win national championship. Oh, our coach is so great. 2 days later, I'm going to Florida. Or I'm going to LSU, a conference rival. Like,
Mike.
Change so fast.
No doubt. Mike, you make a great point. College head coaches don't have time to take in the sights of where they're at. You are 100% correct. It's at their big old kingdom and spread they have. It's got the guard gate and it's huge and they love it. And it's, you know, like when Mike Leach, who I love, Mike, you know, riding his bike or walking to campus at Washington State, or that's their site. It's the direct line between campus and there, and then where they're going to recruit the kid or the coach's office. Other than that, and the facility, the practice field, they truly don't. And when they are there, their vacations, like Nick Saban, are spent on a boat on the water, traveling to another state. That's just the way it works. So their job, but there's no more passionate, and this is no disrespect to Knoxville or fans in Eugene or fans at Penn State. There is no more passionate, demanding fan base of their college football coach than LSU. They are in that team picture across the country. That I can guarantee you.
Yeah, for sure. Our poll question for today, a new poll found out that half of NFL fans think the league is doing enough to protect players, and 60% support expanding the season to, I'm assuming, 18 games. So the question is, do you support shortening the NFL preseason another game and expanding the regular season? Or so our options are, yes, expand regular season to 18. No, keep it as it is with 17. Shorten regular and preseason. So maybe go a game each away from it and go back to our 16-game schedule. Or you're unsure. It depends on players' safety.
That's the last one for me. The player safety, they don't care. The player safety, we're going to play games on Sundays, then we're going to play them on Thursday, and then you're going to – listen, player safety matters, but whether it's four times, they don't care enough about player safety or they wouldn't play Thursday night games. So stop it. It's just enough. Of course we care about player safety. Of course we want to limit cheap shots. Of course we want to make it better for the players and stars and players – not just stars, the backup right guard and all to stay on the field. We don't want injuries. But – there's nothing much more you can do to prevent a knee injury. It's going to happen in football because it's a violent sport. So that would finish last on mine. Well, and I know there's a life ahead of you, but when you take the job to get into this, you're hoping you don't get cheap shot and that you get a little lucky and can stay healthy your entire career. It's not realistic for most, and you hope it's not long-term damage, which may not be realistic, whether it's long-term ankle damage, long-term elbow damage. For me, knee replacement, I mean – somewhere along the line, it's going to hurt a little bit older, just like everybody does when they're 60. So the injury thing, if we're playing preseason games, hell, somebody's in harm's way. You got to play regular. For me, and one that's not on there, for me, I'd just as soon shorten the preseason and add another regular season game, as long as the player's contract isn't prorated for 18 games when they're getting paid for seven. You pay them for 18 games. Because in the preseason, they don't get paid salary. They get paid a stipend for each preseason week, right? And it's not anywhere near the salary they're making. So I'd love 18 game sakes. And I'm going to tell you one extra proposal. If you want 18, I don't want any preseason games. I want to do it like college. The excitement going into college football, since we don't see spring game pumped up, don't play any preseason games. Don't risk those injuries. The starters aren't playing anyway. Here's why they won't, because they want the 60,000 people buying Cokes and beers and hot dogs. But think about this now, about the buildup, what's going on with the team. None of your guys, unless they're beat up on the practice field, hurt. I would rather extend training camp an extra week, which the collective bargaining agreement, the players aren't going to let it, but play have a longer so they polish their game. You get to control all that. Play against those practices against other teams type, and it's controlled. Get rid of the preseason. I don't watch a half a preseason the whole time. No. If a guy makes 10 completions, it doesn't matter because it's a regular season game. Nobody's playing coverage. We never game plan for the opponent in preseason. You're just putting in your own game plan. Get rid of the preseason games. Do like college does, the build up to it. Now, can you imagine not seeing your team play other than watching them practice on a clip, and then September hits, how jacked you are for the season? They'll be better because they focused on the practice field, on the details of their own team, and then you come out running. Give them 18 games, pay them for 18 games. Get rid of the bullshit preseason games anyway. The people that are there, if they're watching, then you need a hobby, because in truth, well, I want to find out what the backup rookie does. Great. You'll see him. If he makes the team, you'll know on the practice field he was doing it exactly, because that's where you make a team. You don't make it by being shitty on the practice field and good in a preseason game, because guess what? If you're shitty on the practice field, you're not going to see the many snaps in the preseason game. So go kick ass in practice. Give me an extra week of training camp so we can polish, take a week and a half, 10 days off, and then go hit the ground running and think about the excitement we'll have knowing our team's healthy, other than a few bumps and bruises from practice, hopefully. And now, man, September 10th hits, or September 8th, whenever that first game is, Thursday, now we're excited. I'd get rid of every preseason game, extend the regular season, pay them for 18 games, and let's go. Now we have even number of games.
Yeah, okay. I would be with that. If that's one option, I would take that in a second. I like the, I don't know if it's just a little bit of OCD. I hate the 17 game schedule. I want either 16 or 18. Give me
You're that never going back number. To 16, say.
No, never going back to 16. Right. So give me the 18, get rid of the imagine that Thursday night, like Chiefs Bills next year with no preseason. We haven't seen football besides college. Then
that's boom. What I'm saying.
Yeah, that would be.
Think about what we talk about, Siggs, how excited you are when it's going around and you're like, it doesn't matter who the opponent is. Like, we're getting our first weekend of college football to see what they've done since spring. We hear it with people that are covering it and press conferences and who the five-star recruit is. But then, we clamor for it. Pardon my French, but fuck preseason games. Yep. I'm just telling you. And folks out there, save the fake outrage that, oh, how dare you get rid of the preseason games. Or I'm really tuned in. If you're tuned in and taking notes during preseason games, other than what you see with the naked eye, probably need a second hobby in truth. Because once again, well, did you see the five throws he made? Great. That's why they drafted him. That's why he's there. But those five throws are going to look a lot different when that guy that's playing against him happens to be a guy named Stingley or happens to be a guy named Sauce Gardner or happens to be T.J. Watt going 100 miles an hour and hitting you in the mouth, which he's not going to do because he's not going to play in the preseason but about five snaps. And you're starting quarterbacks. So let them figure it out on the practice field because I didn't make my rookie year. Now, I had a great preseason games. I don't mean it as a pat on the back, but it just validated what they saw in the practice. I wouldn't have seen all the preseason I saw as an undrafted, injured, free agent quarterback. Right. Had I not performed every day, meeting room, practice, twice a day, gear, 7-on-7 team drill. So they trusted to put me in a preseason game. That's how you made a team. That's how you made a team. And now practice is so short, they kind of do it. They already know 90% of their roster when that preseason opens. Then somebody rears their head and you say, where'd that guy come from? He makes your team. But it ain't eight of them. It's one of them if you're lucky. Maybe two that shocked you with it. But they shock you on the practice field because coaches go in, Siggs, and they say, damn, you see the way that guy's working? How is he in the meeting room? Dude, he is sharp as could be, and he's on time. And so screw the preseason. And I don't want those. I love football. Good. Wait two more weeks until the regular season. Right. And then we bitch. Why is this guy playing? He just blew out his knee. He shouldn't be. Preseason games are a friggin' joke. And I would force, if I was the NFL, force the owners to say, screw your box office stuff. We'll raise $1 million, whatever, as if they need it. Get rid of it.
A home game that, you know, every other year would be now. You're gaining a game guaranteed every single year. A home game.
Pay them for 18. If your salary is $15 million, you pay whatever's on to that player, his extra, you know, $600,000 for that game. He gets it. He's not playing for free like he does in the preseason. More incentive, better season can still end at the same time. Start training camp, give them a week and skip it and let's go play. And our excitement for the NFL will increase because sometimes you get a few injuries. And what's your attitude going into the regular season after preseason? Six, oh gosh, our team sucks, which the preseason is zero indication of how good you're going to be or how bad you're going to be.
Look at the Colts this year. Nobody had them doing what they're doing. Sean, before we get out of here and we do our Kelce prediction of the day, I did see this on X today. It's the jacket that I'm sure you were one of the people that bought, but I mean, $950, Sean, just look at this jacket from Balenciaga that I know was in your shopping cart. And if Tripoli has it, it's great.
And I haven't seen this.
It's called the Destroyed Jacket.
Okay. Let me check it out. Oh, when I put it on in the sheets last night, there was no holes in it, Zakes. I'm not sure what happened. Now, see, here's fashion. This is how it came.
$950.
Yeah. Does it give you a blowjob too while you're at it? I mean, are we kidding? It's like when somebody says, "Hey, man, you just spent $400,000 for the car." Yeah. Well, does it reach up and cop a feel while you're driving for a $400,000 car? Now, look at this. This is basically, hey, dude. We pulled your vehicle off the junkyard. It doesn't work. You look like a scrounge, but this is what they're wearing at Fashion Week in New York. Check this. And by the way, it's not $9 or they're not giving it away for free.
Right.
You actually have to pay for this. So this took artistry. You're telling me if I see this and this is what you're paying $900 for, my clothing, my golf and leisure apparel clothing is going to kill it. Because if that's what they're, I'll give you one for $800 less that actually looks like it wasn't shot with a fucking double barrel shotgun.
Yes.
This, things. And it's like the artist who throws paint against it and just sits there. And you say, that's that art piece right there. Because it was a Rembrandt, but he throws a paint brush up, a whole can of half gallon of paint, and it sits there and it dries, and you're like, brilliant. What? Did he hit the middle of the doggone canvas? Shut up. And anybody that says, oh, that's a good look, but you know what? You're going to see it all over the place. You will see over the place. Yeah, I can't wait to wear that around my house naked. I'm sure that'll make everybody horny. So really, Segs, really? $900 for that? If you're a billionaire, are you buying that shirt? Are you wearing that are you buying that if you're a billionaire?
No.
Somebody is going to get credit for being a brilliant designer for that trash.
Balenciaga. Their shoes are like $2,000 and they're just regular tennis shoes.
You know where you see that? At Skid Row.
Yeah.
Laying on the street somewhere. Skid Row. I not the dog, the Skid Row people have been through tough times. But you see that, hey man, that's the shirt that you had, that you wore when you were 7, that you're giving it away so somebody else can at least be warm at night, or you're covering up an animal that's been left, right? Here, use this. Doesn't matter if it gets dog hair on it. Are you kidding me? Yeah,
go to
no.
Skid Row and ask one of them for their jacket and give them $1,000.
Well, here's another. Yeah, you want to make a difference? Yeah, and make a difference. And then they could do something hopefully better, like maybe get a shirt, a t-shirt for $8 that doesn't have holes in it, not for $950. Thanks. Think about this. Even a homeless person, and trust me, having housed one for 2 years, who is a great man and a friend, they would turn that shirt down. They would say, what's this? It's not even keeping me warm. That's fashion for $950. Then you and I are going to get rich with the unpaved golf line, dude, because I'm telling you that it's easy. Now, I don't need to go to any fashion school or look at swatches of material to know that we're on the right path, because that is trash. And somebody's going to get rich for it.
Just incredible when I saw that today. I was like, $950 for that piece of shit.
You just ruined my day or made my day knowing that you could be that shitty and you could still get paid for it. Life's good, man. Life's good.
Life is good for some people. All right, Kalshi prediction of the day. We got Thursday Night Football. We got the Ravens plus Lamar Jackson, who is playing, going down to Miami to take on the Dolphins. Ravens, a road favorite, -7.5 on the road. That tells you what they think about these crappy Dolphins. And the over-under sits at 51.5. So they're expecting a lot of points, especially with Lamar back. Two not really good defenses. Two offenses that can score when they're rolling. So who you got tonight? What do you like?
Kalshi, this prediction futures market, which is phenomenal. Kalshi, you make it so easy, and we love having these picks. So for me, my prediction on this, I wonder how explosive Lamar is going to be health-wise, right?
Right.
I'm assuming pretty, and I'm assuming he probably recognizes the intensity Baltimore has to play with, considering they can't lose many more Segs if they're going to make the playoffs. They're almost in a must-win situation. But 7.5, is it 6.5 or 7.5? You say 7.5 or 6.5?
7.5.
7.5 on the road when your defense hasn't been that good and you're not exactly the most physical team, in the world, playing against what is the most finesse team on the planet, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday in the Dolphins. I feel like Baltimore wins, but the Miami Dolphins keep this closer. If you said 4.5 or 3.5, give me Baltimore. 7.5 on the road, which scares me a little bit. And there you see Kalshi with how it's trending in this futures pick. I'm going to take Miami at home to cover. I believe Miami covers. Now, if it was Miami 6, 7.5 point favorite, I'd say you're out of your damn mind.
Well, yeah.
But sure. Lamar, maybe an out-of-body experience, and I think he'll play really well. That's still tough to go on the road with the team that hasn't been very good at all this year anyway, meaning Baltimore. I don't like 7.5 points. I think Baltimore wins, but I think Miami keeps it in the number. If you're laying those points, give me the Dolphins at +7.5.
Okay, I like that. I would probably stay away from the points and give me the over. I think both
over as well
can go big here. I think we could see like a 34-30 Ravens win, a 33-30 Ravens win, something like that.
That's the more guarantee, Segs. That's the bigger guarantee in my mind, no doubt.
Even if it's a Miami last, minute TD that, pushes them to cover, but and get over the points that I think they could go big here with points tonight. That, I mean, I'd be comfortable at 52, 53 taking the over.
Yeah, and you're right. It wouldn't shock me if it's 37, 34 at all. I just think that's a lot, especially Miami's coming off, you know, what, a win, right? Didn't they?
Yeah,
they,
big
they
win.
Went off their win where they played pretty good football, but let's not mistake them for anybody who's turned any corner. But the over for sure. But if I was, you know, putting them together, Sags, I wouldn't have any problem going Miami and the over in this game. That would be my choice if I was betting this. And I probably am going to bet the over anyway, but I still think Baltimore's got some proving to do to me to prove that they can go on the road and beat a team, even though it's the Dolphins by 7.5 points when your quarterback hadn't played in 3 weeks. I got to see this.
All right. Well, we'll tell you all about it tomorrow. We'll break down, how does Lamar Jackson look? Did he look explosive in this game and his first game back here in a few weeks for the Ravens? And like you said, kind of some must win games to kind of just get their season back on track. I also want to talk Texas Vandy. This is a big game for Vandy, having to travel down to Austin and keep their college football playoff hopes alive. And then in the NFL, we have the monster game. The rest of the slate's not very good as it wasn't last week, but we've got the Bills at the Chiefs, 3:25 Central Time, the afternoon window. It's going to be the must-watch game, I think, of all football weekend. And we'll start to break that down for you, because that is a NFC or AFC, championship preview type game.
You could spend the whole 45 minutes of this show or hour of the show on that game alone and what they've started, what they've done, who they beat, how they beat them, the game plan, the cat and mouse game of offense and defense and Mahomes. One thing I do know, whenever these two quarterbacks get together, you're watching phenomenal football play. You'll see stuff that a good quarterback ain't going to give you. You'll see stuff that a great quarterback can give you, and you'll see it more than a couple times with these two guys playing against each other on Sunday. It's always an epic matchup with these two.
And the best thing is about this matchup is you got two great defensive minds in Spagnuolo and McDermott, you know, just button heads trying to figure out how to slow each quarterback down.
I'm not sure I trust Buffalo's overall right now, Diggs. I got to see them in a tougher game against somebody that we know they're supposed to. I got to see them against a team now that they're not supposed to beat on the road the way Kansas City's playing. Buffalo's got a perfect chance to prove that their wins weren't, well, against bad teams, that they would have beat good teams along that way as well, which they have not done yet. Time to see it.
All right. Well, thanks to Triple E. Thanks to Laura, as always. Thanks to all our listeners and viewers. We enjoy you guys being in every day. We enjoy doing this show for you guys. We will be back tomorrow at 1 p.m. Eastern, noon Central. Sean, have a fun night watching.
You too, brother.
Ravens, Dolphins.
Yeah. Because we're going to be more physical in my. We're going to be more physical in our own living room with trying to put that damn shirt on that costs $950 with holes in it. So look out for a pillow fight tonight again. Great.
When you do get your jacket that you ordered for $950, just make sure your first time wearing it is on this show. So when it gets here,
I'm tempted to drop $1,000 just for that very reason, dude. Or give me an idea. Matter of fact, sometime next week, I'm going to cut up a shirt and show you my design, and I'm going to wear
Target and grab a red jacket and just slice and dice.
And I'm going to be a fashion connoisseur, and all of a sudden, they're going to invite me to Fashion Week, and it's going to be the rest is history. I've become I'm a fashion expert because I knew where to put the hole in the jacket. Watch.
Keep tuned for next week.
Yep. Sean, can't wait.
On TikTok, just giving out fashion advice.
They're giving that fashion for $950. I'll do it. I'll jump through hoops and crawl 10 miles over broken glass just to hang in their shadow. I'm in for $950 a shirt or a jacket, whatever they call that trash.
All right. Well, be back here tomorrow at 1 p.m. Eastern, noon Central. We'll have more fun, I'm sure. We'll talk to you guys later. Peace.